This is program C-1153. We are in the book of Revelation, chapter number 20, and we are talking now about the end of the millennium and the very brief Gog-Magog insurrection or uprising. Sometimes we refer to it as the war, but it's really not much of a war when we start evaluating it. Revelation chapter 20, starting at verse 7, really doesn't have an awful lot of information about this war, but Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39 fill in an awful lot of the gaps. Now, some Bible teachers believe that Ezekiel 38 and 39 are about some sort of war that takes place before the second coming of Jesus. I disagree. I think the language in it matches exactly what is seen in Revelation chapter 20. One of the things we were kind of closing on yesterday is that in Ezekiel chapter 38, you get down to verse number 8. It says, to Gog, who is, I think, Satan, his name here, Gog, is related to an ancient Mesopotamian word, Gog, which means shining one. And that is exactly what Satan's original name was. Halel in Hebrew and Lucifer or Lucifer in Latin means brilliant one, shining one, light bearer. So I think Gog here in Ezekiel is Satan. And so God is talking to him in Ezekiel 38:7, it says, be prepared and prepare yourself, you and all your companies that are assembled about you. Be a guard for them. After many days, you will be summoned. In the latter years, you will come into a land that is restored from the sword, whose inhabitants have been gathered from many nations to the mountains of Israel, which had been a continual waste, but its peoples were brought out from the nations, and they are living securely, all of them. Verse number 8 describes the millennium to me. It's many years, latter years, a land that has been restored from the sword, restored from waste, and a place where people have been gathered in from all over to live securely and to be with God. And so basically, Satan takes advantage of the unrest of the mortals who don't want to come to Jerusalem every year at the Feast of Tabernacles, refuse to come, and who evidently have been migrating farther and farther away from the highway of holiness and the zone of holiness that would have been all along it. And by the way, you can see kind of a representation of that on page 104 in my notes, which are online at intotheword.net in the PDF resource section. Just as you have seen in other times of history, people who don't want to follow rules tend to migrate away from places where rules are enforced. And so that's exactly what is going to happen in this latter portion of the millennial period. And then Satan comes along and takes advantage of all that anger and hatred and gets this group up. And God says, fine, bring it on. Verse number 8, you will go up. You will come like a storm. You'll be like a cloud covering the land, you and all your troops and many people with you, many peoples with you. And that's very similar to the language that you see in the run-up of Revelation chapter 20 to the Battle of Gog Magog. Revelation 20 verse 7 says, whenever the 1,000 years have been completed, Satan will be released from his detention. Going out, he will deceive the nations in the four corners of the earth. So that's in the fringes of the land, Gog and Magog, in order to gather them for war, their numbers being as the sand of the sea. So it's a lot of people. But remember that the millennial population is probably huge because it's a perfect environment Nobody's dying off, or hardly anybody is dying off amongst the mortals, and then all the resurrected and righteous and redeemed immortals, they are a huge number. So the large number of rebels can be accounted for out of that large number of people living in the period. They went up upon the wide expanse of the land surrounding the encampment of the saints, the beloved city. So they are going to march on Jerusalem. So Satan convinces them, let's all go and kick Jesus off the throne. Let's all go and take the land, the new Jerusalem, the city, and the country, and the world for ourselves. So he's going to try that garbage, and the people are going to go along with it. Now, the book of Ezekiel has more details than the book of Revelation. So let's go back to Ezekiel 38 and pick up in verse number 10. Thus says my master Yahweh, it will come about on that day that thoughts will come into your mind, and you will devise an evil plan. You will say, I will go up against the land of unwalled villages. That's a little bit more firm than what the language actually is. It's open country. So it doesn't have any security fences up or anything like that. So that definitely does not describe Israel today. I've been to Israel a couple of times now, going again in June, and I have seen the security fences and the security walls. That's not Israel today. It's another one of the reasons I don't think Ezekiel 38 and 39 is about things prior to the second coming of Jesus. I think they're prior to the Gog-Magog War at the end of the thousand-year reign, when the people living in the new heaven, new earth, in the Holy Land are living without fear of being attacked. So they're in a land of unwalled villages. I will, continuing in verse 11, I will go against those who are at rest, that live security, all of them living without walls and having no bars or gates, to capture spoil, to seize plunder, to turn your hand against the waste places which are now inhabited, and against the people who are gathered from the nations, who have acquired cattle and goods, who live at the center of the world. So the idea that Satan and his rebel humans have is, we're going to get ours. Those people living down there at Jerusalem, those people living along the highway of holiness, they've got it good, and we want it, and we will take it. Verse 13, Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish with all its villages will say, have you come to capture spoil? Have you assembled your company to seize plunder, to carry away silver and gold, to take away cattle and goods, to capture great spoil? And some people think that this is an objection. I happen to believe it's the other way around. I think these areas are areas to the south of the Highway of Holiness, which when they find out that Satan and his rebels up in the north are going to move on Jerusalem, they're like, hey, is that what you're planning? Well, we want to jump in on that. And so that's the way that I take it. Verse number 14, therefore prophesy, son of man, and say to Gog, thus says my master Yahweh, on that day when my people Israel are living securely, will you not know it? You will come from your place out of the remote parts of the north, you and your many peoples with you, all of them riding on horses, a great assembly and a mighty army. And you can see on the map that all of this area, this described, Gomer, Beth Togomar, Magog, Meshach, Tubal, all of that is part of modern-day Turkey, and I think Armenia and Turkestan and Uzbekistan, places like that. And they are all due north of the Holy Land, and more specifically, the Highway of Holiness and the Holy Zone that is along that Highway of Holiness. So they're going to be heading south with a huge army. Now, they're all on horses because the millennial period is a period when nobody prepared for war. So these guys are going to have to use low tech. And I think that is another one of the reasons to believe that this is at the end of the millennium rather than previous to the second coming of Jesus when high tech is available. Verse number 15, you will come from your place out of the remotest part of the north, you and many peoples with you, all of them riding on horses, a great assembly and a mighty army. You will come up against my people Israel like a cloud to cover the land, and it shall come about in the last days. I will bring you against my land so that the nations may know me when I am sanctified through you before their eyes, O Gog. So God basically says, I am letting you do this so that I can prove to everyone I'm in charge. Verse 17. Thus says Yahweh, God, or my master Yahweh, are you the one of whom I spoke in former days through my servants, the prophets of Israel, who prophesied in those days for many years that I would bring you against them? It will come about on that day when Gog comes against the land of Israel, declares my master Yahweh, that my fury will mount up in my anger. It's literally my nose is going to get hot. It will come about that in my zeal and in my blazing wrath, I declare that on that day there will surely be a great earthquake in the land of Israel. The fish of the sea, the birds of the heavens, the beasts of the field, all the creeping things that creep on the earth, all the men who are on the face of the earth will shake at my presence. The mountains also will be thrown down. The steep pathways will collapse and every wall will fall to the ground. And I will call for a sword against him on my mountains, declares my master Yahweh. Every man's sword will be against his brother. With pestilence and with blood, I will enter into judgment with him. I will rain on him and his troops and on his many peoples who are with him, a torrential rain with hailstones, fire, and brimstone. I will magnify myself, sanctify myself, and make myself known in the sight of many nations, and they will know that I am Yahweh. And so here is a description of what's going to happen when this great big group comes against the city of Jerusalem, when they invade the highway of holiness and region right around the place where Jesus is ruling and reigning with his saints and with his mortals. There will be a huge earthquake, and there is going to be also the people who are attacking will start fighting each other, which should remind you immediately of what we saw in the book of Zechariah, chapter number 14, where God uses a plague against those that try to attack by letting their skin liquefy, their tongues and eyes liquefy, and they end up attacking each other because they're in that panic mode, absolute blind panic. But we also have God bringing down stuff from on high. And that's exactly what it says in Revelation chapter 20, verse 9, the last phrase. It says, fire will come down from heaven and devour them. So all the stuff, all the fine details are in Ezekiel 38 and 39. That describe what is given briefly in the book of Revelation, chapter 20, in verses 7 through 9. And that's the end of this uprising. It's over almost before it begins. And chapter 20 of Revelation, verse 9, says, the slanderer misleading them, that's the devil, was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet had been thrown, and they will be tortured day and night into the ages of ages. So Satan is going to be grabbed during this uprising, and when his human rebels are dead, he is immediately thrown into the lake of fire, otherwise known as hell. And this is the first time that Satan is ever in hell. But hell was prepared for him and his fallen angels, and he now joins the false prophet and the beast leader that are already there for the last 1,000 years, and they will remain there for eternity future. And then we come to the fallout of the Battle of Gog Magog, and that's in the next chapter, chapter number 39. First, let's read this. You, son of man, prophesy against Gog and say, thus says my master Yahweh, behold, I am against you, O Gog, chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and I will turn you around, drive you on, take you up from the remotest parts of the north, and bring you against the mountains of Israel. I will strike your bow from your left hand and dash your arrows from your right hand, and you will fall on the mountains of Israel, you and all your troops and the people who are with you. I will give you as food to all every kind of predatory bird and beast of the field. You will fall in the open field, for it is I who have spoken, declares my master Yahweh, and I will send fire upon Magog and those who inhabit the coastlands in safety, and they will know that I am Yahweh. So this is, again, kind of a review. Once again, God is going to say, fine, bring it on. Come on down here and think if you think you can take the millennial kingdom from Jesus. And when they invade, they're immediately wiped out. And Satan himself is knocked down and taken away off to hell. But that leaves all these dead bodies everywhere in the region around Jerusalem. And that's the cleanup that's described next. Verse number 7. My holy name I will make known in the midst of my people Israel, and I will not let my holy name be profaned anymore. And the nations will know that I am Yahweh, the Holy One in Israel. Behold, it's coming, and it shall be done, declares my master Yahweh. That is the day of which I have spoken. Then those who inhabit the cities of Israel will go out and make fires with the weapons and burn them, both shields and bucklers, bows and arrows, war clubs and spears, and for 7 years they will make fires with them. Again, this was a low-tech invasion because it's at the end of the millennium. And so they only had limited resources to turn into weapons of warfare. So you've got very basic, low-level weapons, shields, bucklers, bows, arrows, war clubs, spears, things that can be made mostly out of flammable material. And so after it's all over with, the cleanup grabs all that stuff and turns it into kindling. Then it says, verse 10, they will not take wood from the field or gather firewood from the forest, for they will make fires with the weapons, and they will take the spoils of those who despoiled them and seize the plunder of those who plundered them, declares my master Yahweh. So they take all this and they've got 7 years worth of kindling. Verse 11, on that day I will give Gog a burial ground there in Israel, the valley of those who pass by east of the sea. And it will block off those who pass by. So they will bury Gog there with his horde, and they will call it the Valley of Hamon Gog. Now, most people are guessing that since the sea is mentioned here, that it's probably the Dead Sea, which during the millennium comes alive, because the water from the River of Life from the Mount of the Temple Mount has brought it to life. I also speculate, and I mentioned this quite a few sessions back, I believe that the Dead Sea Valley, the Jordan Valley, will come back up above sea level. I think it fell below sea level during the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's my opinion. We do know, by looking at the geology, it definitely fell below sea level at some point in the past. And so I think it's going to be raised back up again. And so here, the sea in mind is probably the living sea, the Dead Sea made alive again. On the east side of it would be in what's now the country of Jordan. Back at that time of Ezekiel, it was the country of Moab. But that's apparently the direction from which this invasion was coming. They had come down and swung around from the east. And that's where the destruction happens, and so that's where they start burying the dead bodies. Verse 12, for 7 months the house of Israel will be burying them in order to cleanse the land. Even all the people of the land will bury them, and it will be to their renown on that day that I glorify myself, declares my master Yahweh. They will set apart men who will constantly pass through the land, burying those who were passing through, even those left on the surface of the ground, in order to cleanse it. At the end of 7 months, they will make a search. They will, as those who pass through the land, and anyone sees a man's bone, then he will set up a marker by it until the buriers have buried it in the valley of Hamon Gog. Hamon means hordes of. So basically the army of Gog, the army of Satan. And even the name of the city will be Hamana. So they will cleanse the land. So this is a process that happens for the next 7 months as they're getting all these dead bodies buried in ground. The land has got to be cleansed. It's the perfect world, but it's been contaminated by all these dead bodies. And so that's going to be fixed. Verse 17, as for you, son of man, thus says my master Yahweh, speak to every kind of bird, every beast of the field, assemble and come, gather from every side to my sacrifice, which I'm going to sacrifice for you as a great sacrifice on the mountains of Israel, that you may eat flesh and drink blood. You will eat the flesh of mighty men and drink the blood of princes of earth, as though they were rams, lambs, goats, bulls, all of them fatlings of Bashan. So you will eat fat until you're glutted and drink blood until you're drunk. For my sacrifice, which I've sacrificed for you, you will be glutted at my table with horses and charioteers, with mighty men and all the men of war, declares my master Yahweh. So this is the passage a lot of prophecy teachers go to try to connect this with the battle of Armageddon, because similar language is used for that. But it's basically predatory animal cleanup time. And so here is God using animals, which for 1,000 years have been vegetable-eating animals. Everybody's a vegetarian in the new heaven and new earth. But now they're used temporarily as a cleanup crew. And then the humans go through and pick up the bones that have been picked clean, and they bury those until finally the place is pristine again, and only the big cemetery area, the big mass grave of Hamon Gog, is where all the dead body parts are buried. And then, verse 21, I will set my glory among the nations, and all the nations will see my judgment, which I've executed, and my hand, which I've laid on them. And the house of Israel will know that I am Yahweh their God from that day onward. And the nations will know that the house of Israel went into exile for their iniquity, because they acted treacherously against me, and I hid my face from them. So I gave them into the hand of their adversaries, and all of them fell by the sword, according to their uncleanness and according to their transgressions. I dealt with them, and I hid my face from them. And so now Ezekiel's getting a little bit of a connection to his time period. When you sin, you've got judgment. And so this is the ultimate end of time sin of coming against the millennial kingdom. And those guys learn the lesson the hard way. And so this will be a permanent reminder to everyone. I believe it's related probably to stuff in the book of Isaiah. There at the tail end of chapter 66, it talks about how the righteous redeemed will tread upon the ashes or the dead bodies of those who are killed at the end, and they will see them. And I think this is a reminder, if you go against God, you pay the ultimate price. It is my opinion that once the Gog-Magog war is over with, and it'll be over really fast, that during that period, that's when it becomes obvious everybody else has chosen Jesus. All the other mortals have made their mind up. They want Jesus to be their King of Kings and their Lord of Lords. And that's where we go back to what will happen at the end of the 1,000 years for those who died in rebellion. This comes from, Revelation chapter 20. At the end of verse 4, it says, they came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. So that's the righteous redeemed. They are the ones living as immortals during the 1,000-year reign. Verse 5, the rest of the dead did not come to life until the 1,000 years were completed. This is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is the one who has part in the first resurrection. Over these, the second death has no power, but they will be priests of God and of Christ and will reign with him for 1,000 years. So you've got the immortal, redeemed, resurrection, transformed saints. They are the immortals living during the 1,000-year reign. The rest of the people stay dead until after the 1,000 years are over. And that's what takes us to Revelation chapter 20, verse 11, where judgment day comes. And this is right after Satan is thrown into the lake of fire, after all the people that were part of the Gog-Magog uprising are dead. Revelation chapter 20, verse 11 says, then I saw a great white throne and him who sat upon it, from whose presence earth and heaven fled away. No place was found for them. And I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne. Books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. That's the Lamb's book of life. And the dead were judged from the things which were written in the books according to their deeds. So judgment day now happens for all of the other people that were not part of the righteous and transformed, redeemed of the first resurrection. And when we come back tomorrow, we're going to develop that idea of what happens as judgment day commences after the 1,000 years.